It's been a while since we've caught up with Jim Cott, the former Major League Baseball pitcher, 25 years in the major leagues. And one thing I noted, did you ever officially retire or not, Jim?
Well, I never did. People ask me, when did you retire? And I said, I never did. They retired me in the middle of 1983. They took my toys away.
Was there a particular reason for that?
I think age and economics. I think I was closing in on 45 years old, and I think they thought it was time to, and not that money was an issue in those days, but I think they just wanted to kind of get some younger blood in the bullpen, and I was the guy to go.
You, of course, see Jim on Major League Baseball Network's Thursday Night Baseball along with Bob Costas, and does such a great job them teaming together. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch them this season. Working with Bob, do you have any? Have you ever worked with him before?
Well, I've known Bob for a long time, since his days in St. Louis when I was playing for the Cardinals, and we crossed paths quite a bit because both passionate about baseball, but as far as actually working a game on the air, no, it started 2 years ago when they launched the MLB Network. That was our first time together. We do about 8 or 10 games, so we've developed a nice rapport on the air, and of course we've always been good friends.
You know, I know John Miller and of course Joe Morgan lives here in the San Francisco Bay Area as well, and I asked them about developing the chemistry. How long do you think it takes, and how long did it take for you and Bob to develop chemistry, or was it a natural thing?
Well, the chemistry was a natural thing, but I think what Bob was concerned about is he had really not done baseball for quite a while. And, you know, there's a rhythm you get into. You kind of play off one another, and I think it takes a little while to develop that rhythm. As far as our chemistry together and topics that come up and bouncing things off one another, that was a pretty natural thing right from the first game we did.
One of the things that I've always said is good games get good broadcasts and bad games get mediocre broadcasts. Do you subscribe to that?
Yeah, I think I've been fortunate to have good training from guys like Dick Enberg and Dick Stockton, and I think I've been able to realize from the start that it's not who broadcasts the game, it's the game, and you need to realize that as an announcer. You're not there to be the game, you're there to kind of enhance it, and it's always rewarding when you have people say, hey, I learned something that I didn't know about the game last night, or you made it more interesting, and, you know, then you feel like you're doing what you're supposed to do.
Jim, you're a guy that played this game, so you certainly know the nuances and have an appreciation for teams and players when they do something. And while I sit here in San Francisco, I'm not certainly a homer in any particular way because I have a national show. But, you know, as I watched the whole situation with the Giants last year, and even my friends back east said this, they were very impressed with the manner in which the Giants did this, because it wasn't a guy picking up his team and carrying him on the back in the playoffs. It was truly a team effort, and it seemed to be one devoid of true ego. What was your view of what the Giants did last season?
Well, I think it was very refreshing for a baseball fan like myself and a former pitcher, even though I have a close relationship with Charlie Manuel, the manager of the Phillies. He and I were teammates together, and they appeared to be the stronger team. But, boy, to see what the Giants did and what Bruce Bochy did, I think, you know, sort of keeping everybody on an even keel. And as you said, it should be a lesson to general managers that you don't have to have an all-star at every position. If you have guys that can catch it and score an occasional run, and I think that's where they reminded me a little bit of our 82 Cardinal team. You know, I think the Phillies and the Expos in 1982 had the more powerful teams, but we had speed, defense, and good pitching, and we ended up winning it, and that's kind of what the Giants did.
You know, most of us were, at least sitting here, and I was as well, very impressed with the young pitching that the Giants had, and especially on a big stage like the World Series, to see some of those guys come through. Is it better to be young and just kind of oblivious to that type of pressure when it comes to the circumstance of a playoff or a World Series?
Well, I think when you see young pitchers now like Matt Cain, and I'm in camp with the Twins, and I was telling those pitchers, I said, the guys today are so much more, I think, advanced than we were in terms of their technique, the pitches they can control, And with all the exposure that baseball gets on TV, I don't think young players are quite as intimidated as I was. Say, the first time I faced Ted Williams or Mickey Mantle, you know, they were like a bubblegum card. They were off in space somewhere, and you were so intimidated by what it was going to be like to try to get them out. I think young pitchers today are dealing with that much, much better, and as a result, you're seeing young pitchers and young players, for that matter, be able to handle pressure situations much better.
You had a book out called Still Pitching, and as you said, you know, pitching for 25 years in the major leagues, you'd be the perfect person to talk to about this. And that is Tim Lincecum, who belies the image of a pitcher. He's not a big, tall, overpowering, well-built type of guy. And yet he had early success, and he seems to be able to do things with his body and with his arm that would belie his age and also his stature. What do you read into that as a pitcher about his mechanics and success?
Well, when I talk to young pitchers, and I even did the same thing with the Twins, you don't have to have perfect mechanics, but the object is to develop a repetitive motion, a repetitive release point where you can throw strikes consistently. And how you do it really is insignificant. And everybody thinks that Timmy's delivery is kind of freakish. You know, in a way, he may be the more natural. You know, it's a one-piece flowing motion that works for him. And I always thought the best way to find your natural arm angle is to just field a ground ball and pick it up like you're throwing to first base. You don't think about your legs or your shoulders or what they're doing. And that's where you find your natural release point. And everybody's is different. And so it's kind of nice to see a guy like Tim Lincecum, who everybody thinks is unusual. It's perfectly natural for him and obviously very effective.
Two-prong question, Jim. Do you remember when you went from being a thrower to actually being what you considered to be a pitcher? And I'm just wondering about that maturation process today for young pitchers. How long does it generally take for them to go from being a thrower to being a pitcher?
Well, I was telling young Kyle Gibson, who I think is a name you're going to hear of this year with the Minnesota Twins. He'll probably start the season in the minor leagues. But he was asking, you know, what was your biggest adjustment, and when did you get over it? And I said, I think when I first looked at Mickey Mantle and said, you know, where am I going to throw the ball that I can get him out? You know, I thought that I had to make a perfect pitch, and you put kind of maximum effort into it, and it didn't always work, and thus you were a thrower. And then all of a sudden you threw a pitch with just a natural release of maybe 80% effort, had a little movement to it, and the Mickey Mantles and the Ted Williams and the Al Kalines, they'd ground out, pop up, just like a lot of other hitters. And then you would trust your stuff and believe that you didn't have to rear back and put maximum effort into every pitch in order to get a big league hitter out. And I think that's what the maturation process is, going from a thrower to a pitcher.
Also, when you take a look at the great hitters, they tend to do at least one thing consistently. I was talking to Tony Gwynn about this, and he said, you know, you don't try to pull a pitch that's on the outside part of the plate. And I know exactly what he's talking about. Do outside the great hitters, do generally hitters get themselves out, or do pitchers get them out?
I think there are a few, and maybe Tim Lincecum would fall into that category of a pitcher that gets a hitter out. Certainly Koufax did, Nolan Ryan, Randy Johnson, Roger Clemens in his prime. They do it with natural stuff. The rest of us mortals, I think, and I used to discuss this with a lot of my teammates who wondered how I won games with less than what you'd call electric stuff. And I said, you have to give the hitter enough opportunities to get himself out. Throw strikes early in the count, change speeds, make him put the ball in play. And so I think for the most part, most pitchers have to give hitters opportunities to get themselves out.
But wouldn't you agree with me, Jim, that one of the things that was your strength is that you understood what you could and could not do as a pitcher, and so therefore you didn't try to put a square peg in a round hole?
I was talking with Jack McKeon, who, those of you that don't remember Jolly Jack, he managed the Marlins to the World Series in 2003. He was my minor league manager and catcher in 1958. And before you counted pitches and limited numbers of innings, you know, we had seven pitchers on a staff, and we got to pitch every 4 days and pitch a little relief even in between starts. And he would come out in the sixth or seventh inning, be a couple men on. He'd come out to mound, he'd flip me the ball and say, well, figure out a way to get out of it. And so I think that's when you found out what worked for you and what didn't. And late in the game, you kind of became your own relief pitcher and changed your style. And as you said, then you found out what worked for you and what didn't, and realized that it wasn't necessarily how hard you threw or how sharp your curve was, but you know how you could control your pitches and change speeds and take the ball off the fat of the bat.
Jim Cott has joined us on Sports Byline. Again, you can watch Jim all season long on Major League Baseball Network's Thursday Night Baseball broadcast along with Bob Costas, and you want to be sure to check out MLBnetwork.com for your local channel listing as well. We'll continue as we move across the country and around the world. We've got you on Sports Byline.